ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to Medialand, your weekly look at what's happening behind the scenes and on your screens. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Vivian Kelly.
This week, the challenges and opportunities for First Nations media in 2026.
The two big radio companies are fighting again.
And the block hits a roadblock. What does the heart want, Viv?
Oh, my heart or your heart or I heart?
There's
Tim.
A lot of hearts about this week, aren't there?
Look, for context for Medialand listeners, Tim is not trying to pry into my mind or heart. Instead, he's talking about some radio platforms. So there's one called iHeart Radio, which is a global streaming platform. It's actually massive in the US. They have huge music festivals and get access to artist interviews and all sorts of things. And that is licensed here by a company called ARN, which runs the KISS and Gold radio network. So if you want to tune in to their radio shows or their podcasts, you can do so via an app called iHeart. Then its rival, Southern Cross Austereo, announced it was launching a platform called Heart. I also heard rumours or perhaps jokes that they were going to call it My Heart. So it was going to be My Heart versus iHeart. And I think what this boils down to is media companies engaging in really old school tactics.
Shenanigans.
That kind of could end up confusing the end consumer. But maybe that's the point, Tim. Maybe they want audience confusion.
Yes, and I think some of the timing about Southern Cross Austereo announcing that launch of the Heart Network, and, you know, they did happen to own the trademark. They used to own a radio station in Tasmania called Heart. It was all around the fact that ARN were having their upfronts, their big announcements for what they're planning next year this week, and they knew that they'd be talking about iHeart, and lo and behold, they got their announcement the day before.
So the Heart Network is starting with what's being dubbed two adult contemporary stations, Heart and Heart Hits. I believe Heart is crafted for a female audience, offering a mood-based format that helps listeners to escape and unwind. And I love this bit, Tim, with a diverse range of songs spanning the 70s, 80s to now. As someone who was born in the 80s, it actually wasn't that recent. So 80s to now is what they used to say when I was in primary school in the 90s, and we're still saying the 80s to now. Have we lost all concept of time?
And I suppose while we're talking about Southern Cross Austereo, they're also doing some work to find the next generation of talent as well.
Yeah, so one of the biggest criticisms of radio, particularly commercial radio, is that they no longer have a pipeline for young, emerging talent. A lot of them used to come through really regional and remote stations, many of which don't exist now. They just have syndicated programming. So they're doing a thing called Pilot Week, where each morning in December, they will do a pilot of various combinations of different up-and-coming talent. And they say that the winner of that will get a spot on the Triple M network, which isn't something that the radio networks have done for a long time, a week-long showcase of emerging talent. So maybe we should apply, Tim, because I believe applications are open this week.
Although we should definitely have a think about throwing our hats in the ring then, Viv. And as I mentioned, it was ARN's big upfront event. We were both there, although we didn't really bump into each other. It was like there were 1,000 people or something in the room, weren't there?
It was a very, very big and very bold event. I think I saw you on somebody else's Instagram story, Tim, but I didn't actually see you there.
Well, I was unaware I had even appeared. So I guess the key announcement was, for all of this talk about would Kyle and Jackie O show go national, which has been such a conversation, Kyle Sanderlands, Jackie Henderson, controversial in Sydney, not really rating in Melbourne, expectation would they go national? they did not.
No, they didn't. And they sort of actually played quite a small role in what was quite a bold and long presentation that really showcased a lot of their talent, both executives and on mic. One of the biggest criticisms of the event, I would say, is that Jackie O and Amanda Keller on Gold were some of the only prominent female talent to be going on air next year. A lot of shows that used to feature females have been cut, or the female is no longer in the naming of the show. I guess the flip side of that, and what ARN would argue, was they did announce iHeart Women's Sports, which is going to host all sorts of podcasts and platforms showcasing women's sport and up-and-coming announcers in that sector. It's just that that won't be going on broadcast linear radio. So when people look at the talent lineup, they go, gosh, that's incredibly male. Reality TV juggernaut The Block didn't quite get its fairy tale ending this week when the houses went to auction on Sunday night.
There we go. We're on.
The day has come.
We're here to sell.
Oh, this is good. Hey! Is anyone breathing?
Final. Are we all done?
Pause it immediately.
Stop the auction.
Forget about this week's unexpectedly high inflation numbers, Viv. The only economic indicator I look out for each year is whether all the houses sell on The Block. And despite reaching more than 2.4 million TV viewers, The Block couldn't get all five houses out of the way in this year's end of season auction.
Yeah, despite the really dramatic music that we heard in The Block promo, it was a bit of an underwhelming ending for viewers and for those people trying to sell the properties and make money. I guess one of the things is so many people watch for the property porn aspect of it, the renovations, the human-to-human drama. So that was all served up this season. The thing that wasn't there was Lambo Guy, who very loyal Medialand listeners might remember from our much earlier episodes. And he was the one who bought a number of properties in a previous season, and he didn't buy any this time. So it's perhaps not so much an economic indicator when you compare it to the fact that one guy was snapping up so many of the properties, which kind of is how the Australian property market works at the moment anyway. Some people can't get any and others collect them all like Pokemon.
Now, I think his name is Adrian Portelli, if I remember rightly. Now he's moved, switched networks. He's over at Renault Rules, which is Channel 7's new push into that property genre.
Yeah, people overseas often talk to me about Australians and indeed Australian media's obsession with property and how many platforms we give it in conversation, on television, in the newspaper. And this is just another indication of that. When it's so difficult to get Australian content off the ground, we still have so many property-focused shows. And as much as we might critique it, 2.4 million TV viewers for The Block, Tim, is just not numbers that you hear that often anymore for traditional media.
You're listening to Medialand on ABC Radio National. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Vivian Kelly. We spoke last week about the challenges and opportunities facing local media in Australia, Tim.
One aspect we didn't discuss was the role that First Nations media has in covering all of modern Australia and the accompanying islands.
Wally Tallis is the CEO of First Nations Media. He's of Torres Strait Islander and South Sea Island descent, with family connections to the Birriggubba peoples of North Queensland. And he's with us now. Hi, Wally.
Hello, how are you both?
Good, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us on Medialand. Just while we kick off, can you give us a bit of a picture of what First Nations media looks like in 2025? What kinds of outlets are there?
So First Nations Media Australia, in your introduction on the CEO, of we basically have a membership base what covers the multimedia platforms of radio, television and print media. So currently in Australia, and you know, I'll talk a bit about our membership base a bit later, but we have roughly about 120 First Nations radio stations, and these vary in size. Obviously in remote communities they're extremely small. We have our local national print paper called the Koori Mail, which I don't know if listeners are familiar with. And then we have various TV stations. You know, NITV is a member of ours, Impaja, you know, ICTV in Alice Springs. So we're certainly diverse in regards to our multimedia platforms. And the most important thing is we cover the breadth of what this place we call Australia.
And if there's a single theme that we tend to find ourselves going back to here on Medialand is how tough running media businesses, whether for profit or not for profit, can be. What would you say is the state of health of the First Nations media sector at the moment?
Very good question, Tim. Unfortunately, our media sector is struggling for sustainability. We do have some aspects of our sector which are what I call at the stabilisation process. But to give your listeners a bit of a view, First Nations media has been around for 30, 40, 50 years. There's multiple stations who have had that length of time. But we're predominantly funded by the government through the Community Broadcast Fund and also the Community Broadcasting Act through ACMA. A lot of our listeners may know some of our stations or be aware of some of them, but First Nations media has not actually had indexation or CPI funding for 30 years. So in real terms, our sector's actually $20 million behind what today's living is. And if you ask people 30 years ago what milk and bread cost compared to today, they'll get an understanding of, you know, the impact that not growing with CPI or the cost of living will take. And Australia's facing that cost of living pressure now. So unfortunately, our sector is at a critical point where we need the government to come to the table in regards to not making sure we're advancing First Nations people, but bringing us to the starting line like everyone else. So a couple of our other mainstream partners, the non-Indigenous community sector, do get indexation in their funding. So I think my job as the peak organisation is to make sure that my advocacy and the opportunity that First Nations people come to the starting line like every other community broadcaster is dealt with by the government, and that's what we're pushing for.
The other thing that really struck me looking at a number of your members' digital presence is certainly what looks like a relative lack of support when it comes to advertising from Australia's big brands, for instance. You know, we see some job advertising, people like SBS are quite supportive, some kind of health messaging from the government, but not much beyond that, or that was certainly my impression.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Tim. To give it context, the community broadcast licensing only allows 5 minutes of advertising an hour, so it is different to commercial radio. However, a lot of our stations, or the majority of our stations, struggle to get sponsorship in. Can I tell you, unfortunately, and I've had first-hand experience, I'm based here in Brisbane, and I used to be the chair of one of the local radio stations. Since the referendum to The Voice, we lost our sponsorship. So it's alarming that we don't have mainstream commercial people investing in First Nations media when we certainly play a role in regards to the communities they serve. So it's a constant battle for our community, and that just doubles down on not only the lack of funding by government to bring us to parity, but then the ability for us to be sustainable and grow as a sector is not there because of that commercial input.
Wally, speaking of The Voice, a lot of stories we hear about First Nations people in the mainstream media, it's often related to negative outcomes, whether it be The Voice referendum not getting up, or comparative health outcomes, or comparative incarceration rates. How do you balance the realities of the difficulties and challenges facing First Nations peoples in this country with also wanting to tell the really positive and beautiful things about those communities?
Well, I think, Vivian, you've actually hit on the head of what the whole foundation principle of First Nation media are about. So all of our stations are positive. We celebrate our wonderful artists, our culture, our language preservation. You know, these young artists, what are coming through, the Jessica Mowboys, the Baker Boys, all started through First Nations media platforms. We have an opportunity where, you know, a lot of our messaging, in fact, the majority of our messaging is celebration and culture. And I think the First Nations media plays that positive reinforcement to make the wider Australia, but also the First Nations of people, being proud that we are the first Australians. We live in a wonderful country, and there's great opportunity for Australia to embrace their First Nations people. So I think you've hit on a really critical point there, is that the media plays, our First Nations media plays such a critical role in celebrating, and people demystifying and understanding that we also love our music, our country music. We have wonderful artists. You know, we want people who are working in the tech space and videos and podcasts. And, you know, we are part of the broader digital, new digital economy of Australia. And the majority of our sector is, like I said, is about celebration and making that glass half full approach in regards to doing that and celebrating what a lot of our First Nations cultures all around Australia do. And you know, we don't walk away from the fact that we have fact in regards to some of those things you talked about, in regards to the closing the gap and, you know, the deplorable results of incarceration and all that type of stuff. And that is part of a media platform. But the significant majority of our sector is about demystifying that message and knowing that First Nations people are contributing to this society today and celebrating our culture.
So what role do your members and their organisations play with the preservation of First Nations languages?
We at FNMA actually are supporting our sector, and I acknowledge the National Film and Sound Archives and the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander ATSIS unit who are supporting and key partners for us. But a couple of listeners might be aware that back in the old days, you know, I'm 54 myself, but back in the old days we had old reels and tape. Yeah, it's a beautiful age. I like these young people like Vivian, but that's all right.
It means we're both about to leave that advertising-friendly demographic of 25, 54.
That's it. I don't tick that. I just keep on saying the same box. But, so we actually have received some support in regards to starting to archive the old analog and platforms, because a lot of these recordings have language which is starting to die, and you touched on that critical point. But we also have stories and important things of significance which, you know, for generations to come, if we don't save these reels and actually get these things recorded and digitised and archived, then they're going to be lost forever. So First Nations Media, one of the key priorities which we started 2 years ago, was to start to digitise and get our members' material to a platform of being safe and secure. And what I mean by that is a significant majority of our members are in remote communities. They don't have environmentally controlled rooms. So we're providing that support to make sure that they're packaging, we're preserving, that when we get time to actually digitise, and, you know, the cutoff date is next year in June for some of the material we have to archive, or it's going to be starting to degrade and we won't ever get it back. So it's a significant priority of us around archiving the material. And I think, you know, in future years, 100 years to come, when I'm certainly not around, we'll be able to look back on the wonderful history and the stories of First Nations people, and we're doing that through our First Nations media.
And you touched on funding already. Are the finances already in place to support that archiving?
Yes, we actually took, before my tenure, I've been in the role for 2 years, but listeners may have been aware of a mining company's discretion in regards to Jungan Gorge, where they actually blew up one of the caves. Mm. As part of the remuneration, the local traditional owners, where one of our stations sit, asked for, as part of the conference, for money to come to us to actually undertake archiving. So we've received that through Brio in regards to their process. And that's part of them starting their giving back, but it's such a significant cause in regards to doing that. And then I talked about those two government partners. They're funded to actually digitise and preserve our language and processes. So it's a collective approach between community, our state organisations, and a corporate support. It's just unfortunate that that investment had to come through such a tragic event, but we can only look forward to make sure we get a positive out of it.
You're listening to Medialand on ABC Radio National with Tim Burrows and me, Vivian Kelly. We're speaking to Wally Tallis, the CEO of First Nations Media, about the state of First Nations media in this country. Wally, I want to ask about your sort of purpose and platform beyond Indigenous audiences. Do you want settlers and immigrants in this country to engage with First Nations media, or is this a sort of safe space only for people who descend from First Nations peoples?
No, definitely not, Vivian. It is a significant majority of our listeners across multiple stations are the community. I know based in Brisbane, I think it's around 50% of the listenership is actually non-Indigenous people. So it helps when we're playing good country music and we're starting to take off that process. But a lot of our members have non-Indigenous listenership, and that's a wonderful thing. Not only do people get access, like I spoke about before, to our wonderful talent, but they have an opportunity to hear some of the First Nations perspectives through a First Nations lens. And one of the things what, you know, differentiates us between the main or broader media is that we're a trusted source. You know, a lot of the feedbacks, and there's a report coming out from the Wichard Institute right now, is, you know, our listenership, and that's both non-Indigenous and Indigenous, rated us around to the high 80% in regards to trust. I won't sit there and tell you where ABC come, but they certainly, but I'll share if it was around the 30s. So that just gives you an indication we're double the mainstream platforms, because for us, and it's important that we do this from a wider point and basis, I think the majority of Australia don't know what they don't know. I think, you know, just a quick reference back to The Voice is, it was very confusing, and I think the mainstream media took a hold of it and actually articulated the narrative where First Nations people were the trusted source in regards to what it should be. You know, a negative of that, and I don't know if we're going to touch on it, but the negative of that is that government could have played a more active role in regards to ensuring that First Nations media was front and centre in regards to the wider awareness campaign of that. So we actually were telling a story through fact instead of actually having a right-wing media or a left-wing media trying to take control and putting it for their purposes. So we do have a listenership. A lot of people do hear stories, events, you know, what places mean. And, you know, we were talking to Tim before about I've just come back from beautiful Tasmania, and the cultural aspect of there is hidden. And, you know, the Tasmanian Aboriginal people are proud of their culture and everywhere in Australia. So the more we can have our listenership hearing our stories and not being afraid and demystifying it through a trusted source, I think is imperative. And the more people who listen to First Nations media will get that, plus seeing, you know, the wonderful talent we have.
Yes, you touched on Tasmania. Am I right in thinking there isn't actually a First Nations broadcasting service in Tasmania?
No, and that's an absolute priority of FNMA, where in 2025 we do not have a First Nations media presence in three of our capital cities. So ACT, the capital of Australia, does not have a First Nations media presence. Tasmania, the whole state, does not have a First Nations media presence. And Adelaide. So FNMA, and I was there last week, is engaging. I acknowledge Minister McCarthy, who is our funder, who's certainly extremely supportive of making sure that we have a First Nations media presence. But to be honest with you, I don't know how familiar you are, Tim and Vivian, with the ACMA process and going through the licensing, but it's a bit back the front, but we have to play the game of making sure we do that. But, you know, I'd like to think that First Nations media is geographically covered across the entire Australia, and it's so important we exist in all of our cities. To tell you, we exist everywhere else, like 120 stations all across Australia. You know, 30 main ones. We work on like a hub and spoke model, so, you know, T-Bar, for instance, which operates out of Larrakia country in Darwin, has 29 little outlets that service Groote Eylandt and other small communities. And so, you know, we exist in a lot of the places where there is no other media outlets, and sometimes we're the only emergency broadcaster for those communities or informing them of what's happening in the world. So it is imperative that we have a First Nations footprint everywhere.
So what sort of support are you looking for at the moment to make that happen, whether it be from state or federal governments or other outlets? What do you need to make that a reality?
I'll answer that in two ways. Firstly, the existing services need government to start using First Nations media. And I touched on it briefly to The Voice. Like, a lot of our state and territories, or the significant majority of our state and territories, do not use First Nations media in regards to broadcasting closing the gap services. So we're not even advertising to that demographic through the mechanism they listen to. So, you know, government needs to procure the services of First Nations media to get the messaging out, so we don't have overrepresentation in the justice system. We are making sure that people are getting immunised at birth and that we've got low fetal alcohol syndrome rates, because all of that messaging in the services, the people have an awareness campaign. So it is critical that government invests procurement in our sector and start utilising the existing dollars that we actually get the message out to our sector, because it can only have social benefits. There's really practical things that the people can do. Secondary to that procurement cycle is, you touched on it before, and I use the example with Rio, is that we have a lot of corporates who aren't investing in our sector. And it sometimes doesn't mean that we have dollar value, but in-kind support. And what I mean by that is we have a lot of remote facilities who have to buy in IT tech support. Like, that's a significant cost and a further burden on First Nations media landscapes. And all people from a remote setting, they don't have accessibility. So corporates, I think, can play a role in regards to supporting these sector through, I like to use the analogy, teaching them how to fish. And so, you know, making sure that we're going there and building the capacity and teaching the sector around basic, you know, basic capability around IT awareness and keeping our stuff clean and all that type of stuff, because we simply don't have the resources or the investment from capital to make sure we're getting new equipment every year. And the last and most important thing, and I touched on it in the opening statement, is we are $20 million underfunded as a sector to bring us up to parity. So we need, and to just give you an idea of what $20 million is, it's double what we currently get for the nation. So we're currently a sector which gets around $20 million. We need double that to actually be a sustainable sector.
Well, Wally Tallis is the CEO of First Nations Media. Thank you so much for joining us today, Wally.
No, thank you for the opportunity to let your listeners know a little bit more about First Nations Media. And like I said, we're a wonderful opportunity where people can learn about this wonderful First Nations Australia culture. Thank you.
Viv, we were speaking earlier about reality TV. Now we need to check in on this one, because I know you've been watching. How is the new season of the new series, The Golden Bachelor, going?
Look, for context, I used to be the nation's most committed viewer of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette in its heyday. I would watch it, I would talk about it, I would read all the recaps of it. And then it obviously fell down in popularity. And not to say that I caused that, but I really do feel like I led the charge and gave up on that series and that format a bit before everybody else did. Decided to give it a go with The Golden Bachelor because it kind of felt like appointment linear television viewing might be back within a certain limited demographic. You know, I went to a dinner party where my friend cooked enchiladas and gave us roses and Aperol spritzes. And it felt like, oh, we're all talking about this one moment, you know, the group chats are going off. It is starting to fall off a little bit for me, though. There's only so far a certain formula can stretch, even if you put women and men in their 50s and 60s on there instead of their 20s and 30s.
So I believe the capture this time is somebody by the name of Bear. Am I correct in thinking?
That is his nickname, yes. And there are so many puns used about his name. I think one of the potential flaws of this season is that the main Golden Bachelor, Bear, seems like a very likable man. It is very obvious, though, how scripted he is. That's really coming across. You can sort of hear the producers in his ear feeding him terrible puns about being a bear. And it's just not coming off as authentically as perhaps it should. But the other thing is, we've spoken in a previous episode of Medialand with Megan Pistetto from So Dramatic about reality TV in 2025. And perhaps it's not even The Golden Bachelor or Nine's fault. Maybe we just know too much about the machinations of reality TV now to kind of tune out and just enjoy it.
Well, remember to follow Medialand on the ABC Listen app.
And are you one of the 2.4 million people who watched the Block finale? What's the appeal and will you keep watching next year? Our producer, Rob, would genuinely love to hear from you on this. So please email us at medialand@abc.net.au.
And thank you to producer Rob Kelly. We will catch you the same time next week in your feeds and on Radio National.
See you, Tim.
Toodle-pip, Viv.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.